Welcome, everyone. It's Corinne Zupko, and I'm so grateful, as always, to take this time out of our week to join together to share in these teachings in A Course in Miracles. Before we shift into our meditation, I just want to give a quick announcement so I don't forget. My friend Emily Bennington started a new Facebook group called Course Companions, in which she will be posting daily readings from the Circle of Atonement edition of A Course in Miracles. I believe she's intending to do some videos every day, and she'll be posting a weekly reading schedule. And the intention is to go through the book in a year. She's been working actually very closely with Robert Perry, who edited this Circle of Atonement edition. He is, I don't know if he's the president, I believe he might be the president of Circle of Atonement. So we're going to be having that group if you're interested in joining. Again, it's on Facebook and it's called Course Companions. So let's join together in meditation. Allowing your eyes to close. And again, just a reminder, if you do have any background noise, if you can mute your line by pressing *6 and just being mindful, if you're not on mute, of the placement of your microphone, making sure it's not rubbing against anything. So turning our attention from without, from the external world, to within. It's within where eternity lies. It's within where heaven lies. And it's within where the Holy Spirit abides. This part of our own right mind is with us always in this moment. And we can turn to this part of our mind in any given moment, asking for our fearful perceptions to be replaced, to be exchanged for miracles, for love. Connecting with your willingness within to see differently. Connecting with your willingness to know the truth. Above all else, we want to see differently. In this holy instant, we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we place Holy Spirit in charge tonight by our request. Connecting with our sense of gratitude for this path and connecting with our sense of gratitude for each other, for holding this space, for our joint willingness to see truly. Taking a nice mindful breath in and out and coming together to our perception of right here, right now. So we are going to reread the two paragraphs we read last week, and then I'll flow right into reading the third, and then we'll pause. If you have the Sparkle edition, we're on page 474. The subheading is The Lifting of the Veil. If you have the original edition by Course in Miracles Society, it is chapter 19, part 5. Subheading D, and then under that is another subheading called The Lifting of the Veil. In the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, it's chapter 19, part 4, and then the subheading is D, like in dog, and then I, also called The Lifting of the Veil. It's page 421 in my version of the text. And last but not least, we have the Circle of Atonement edition, which is page 629, paragraph number 8. So let's dive in. So I'm going to just read the first three paragraphs because we read the first two last week. The lifting of the veil. Forget not that you came this far together, and it was surely not the ego that led you here. No obstacle to peace can be surmounted through its help. It does not open up its secrets and bid you look on them and go beyond them. It would not have you see its weakness and learn it has no power to keep you from the truth. The guide who brought you here remains with you. And when you raise your eyes, you will be ready to look on terror with no fear at all. But first, lift up your eyes and look upon each other in innocence, born of complete forgiveness of each other's illusions, and through the eyes of faith, which sees them not. No one can look upon the fear of God unterrified unless he has accepted the atonement and learned illusions are not real. No one can stand before this obstacle alone, for he could not have reached thus far unless his brother walked beside him. And no one would dare to look on it without complete forgiveness of his brother in his heart. Stand you here a while and tremble not. You will be ready. Let us join together in a holy instant, here in this place where the purpose given in a holy instant has led you. And let us join in faith that he who brought us here together will offer you the innocence you need and that you will accept it for my love and his. Nor is it possible to look on this too soon. This is the place to which everyone must come when he is ready. Once he has found his brother, he is ready. Yet merely to reach the place is not enough. A journey without a purpose is still meaningless, and even when it is over, it seems to make no sense. How can you know that it is over unless you realize its purpose is accomplished? Here, with the journey's end before you, you see its purpose. And it is here you choose whether to look upon it or wander on, only to return and make the choice again. And there I shall pause. So we talked about the two paragraphs last week, so I'm not going to recap those, but of course, if you have anything that's coming forward for you, feel free to bring it up. So this is prompting us that it's not possible to look on this obstacle, the fear of God, too soon, and yet we have to do it with our brother, meaning we couldn't have come this far without our willingness to see the Christ in one another. It goes on to say, to reach this place is not enough. A journey without a purpose is still meaningless, and even when it is over, it seems to make no sense. So we know that the journey is over once we realize the purpose is accomplished. What is the purpose of this seeming journey that we've embarked on? I think there's many different ways that we could say it, but the purpose of this journey, the words that came to me when I was reading this, are those words, know thyself. We forgot our truth. We've chosen to forget who it is that we really are, and we have an opportunity in any given moment to remember ourself, to remember the capital S self, who it is that we really are, beyond time and space, beyond the body, the Son of God, unchanged and unchanging forever, who we've always been and who we always will be. So we have this choice to see this, to know this about ourselves now, or we can either choose to look upon it, or we can choose to wander on, like it says, only to return and make the choice again. Now, the other thing that it's talking about, too, is to look upon the fear of God. As we've been reading for the past couple weeks, the fear of God is like that final obstacle. Because we believe deep down that there's a lot of guilt in us, that we are guilty for having actually pulled this separation off, which, as we know, never happens, that we're not guilty. There's nothing to feel guilty for. So this fear of God, we have this opportunity, at least in my own experience, as it sort of comes to my awareness, I'm given a chance over and over again to look at it, to go a bit more deeper, to withhold nothing, to give it to Holy Spirit. So we have this choice to choose miracles, to experience holy instants, or to be capable of enormous procrastination and just put off and put off and put off this choice that we ultimately, or this remembering that we are all ultimately going to accept into our minds.
Well,
so
then,
I'll pause there. I'm wondering, yes, Meg.
This is what came to me, that actually when we get to A point or Z point, there is no fear of God because God disappears.
I'm not sure what you mean.
Meaning that you come to the realization in the self that there is only God,
mm-hmm.
which means you are also that.
Mm-hmm.
So
gotcha.
There's no fear because
right.
God disappears.
The concept of God disappears. Is that
yes.
what you mean?
Yes.
Yes, yes, the concept of God. God is. God can't disappear. It's the concept of God. Our thoughts about what that is that go away because it just is. You're right. It just is. So, yeah,
yeah
that's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank
You're
you.
Welcome.
Anything else coming up for anyone? We're good. Shall we keep reading?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go for it. To look upon the fear of God does need some preparation. Only the sane can look on stark insanity and raving madness with pity and compassion, but not with fear. For only if they share in it does it seem fearful. And you do share in it until you look upon each other with perfect faith and love and tenderness. Before complete forgiveness, you still stand unforgiving. You are afraid of God because you fear each other. Those you do not forgive, you fear. And no one reaches love with fear beside him. And there I shall pause. Okay, I was just double-checking that we have the same paragraph breaks in the FIP edition, and it looks like we do. So, fear of God is stark insanity and raving madness. This is the ego, right? This is the ego keeping, or let me rephrase that. The belief or feeling that God is fearful is stark insanity and raving madness. It something that is other than God is a belief in an ego, that there could possibly be something else. And that's just insane and raving mad. And gently, in my experience, let me just maybe give an example, that layers of fear surface as I am ready to look at them. So I've had moments of touching a deep-seated guilt. And in that touching, I've been willing to look at that with Holy Spirit. I've had moments of connecting with, oh, my gosh, I actually am afraid of God. Like, I don't want to look. I'm afraid of not being Corinne anymore. I've had those moments, and I know that we all have. And it's those moments that as we become aware of them and as we take them to Holy Spirit and are willing to see them differently, then it's like the next layer is ready to come up, you know. So many of us use that example of peeling back the layers of an onion, that these layers of fear, of seeming fear, these seeming layers of seeming fear surface as we're ready to look at them. And so that, to me, is this example of preparation, that as we learn through, you know, I have one little fear come up that I recognize and I'm willing to look at it with Spirit and I experience a miracle instead, that's showing me that there's nothing to fear, you know. I have that restored sense of peace. It builds my trust. And so that's the preparation. The preparation is our ongoing willingness to experience miracles, our ongoing willingness to choose for Holy Spirit, to turn to Holy Spirit. So that to me is the preparation.
Corinne, I have a question.
Sure.
The more we begin to realize that Holy Spirit is not separate from us, that we are actually Holy Spirit, and that God is not separated from us, that we are actually God, it seems, and when I say God, I don't mean God from a subject-object, but we are just merged. We are actually just one thing. We're like the mind of God. We're God's mind, if you want to put it that way. So my question is this. Once we think that and realize that, it seems fear has to vanish, because fear is insanity, because it's like we're saying we're afraid of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you that fear has to vanish. That, you know, a couple things come to mind, Meg. And I'm sorry, did you finish asking your question?
Yes, I did.
Yes. Okay. A couple things come to mind that I want to highlight for the group in a lot of your sharings, because when you share, I find that Meg is often speaking at the highest level, like the highest level of truth.
Yeah.
And that is a big leap for many of us,
for where
we are now to that. It feels like, whoa, you know? I very much believe, I'm going to come back to your point, Meg. I completely agree with you. But I very much believe that we don't just go to heaven, we grow to it. That's you know, that popular saying, we don't go to heaven, we grow to it. And that's my gut sense. That's a sense that I've gotten from, like, Dr. Eben Alexander's book when he had his near-death experience. I got that sense from his book. The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. I don't know if anybody on the call has ever read that, but that's another great one where this woman, Annie, her brother was like a bad boy. He ends up getting killed, and she can still hear his voice. So the book is basically, you know, their conversation and the things that he's learning and the things that, you know, he's teaching her. And the interesting thing there is that, like, there's still this sense of him, this sense of self, but he's not in his body. And yet at this one point in the book, Annie is not sure if she's going to ever hear his voice again, because he decided to go on into the absolute supreme oneness, which then he comes back from, and she does hear his voice again. So to me, Meg, when you share, you're speaking at, like, when her brother in the formless realm chooses to go to the, like, you know, into just the oneness, and she doesn't hear his voice, you're often speaking about there. And so the in-between, though, is the, you know, the remembrance, sort of the stages that we go to. And I believe that the choosing for fear or love continues even when we leave our bodies, meaning at that moment of death, we have a choice, like, to look onto fear and then go back into this and start a whole other lifetime, or to say, oh, no, I'm going to turn to Holy Spirit and then move on and then grow, you know, continue to grow. In that turning to Spirit, as we drop the concepts, as we drop the beliefs that we are a self, I mean, this is the whole premise of my book, is that as I've learned to drop the idea of Corinne, and I've only dropped it a little bit, you know, I still wake up every morning thinking of Corinne, I've dropped a little, and in that little bit, anxiety cannot exist. My anxiety issues have fallen away, and the residual ones that pop up here or there have been opportunities to take it to Spirit and go deeper. So I 100% agree with you. Fear has to vanish. It cannot exist. Now, the other thing, Meg, that I wanted to add, and this is for everybody, I may have mentioned this a week or two ago, that I one of the teachers who I love is Corrine Walson, who is a Christian Scientist, and or I shouldn't say that. She comes from a Christian Science background. I don't know if she still identifies as a Christian Scientist, because she very much embodies and teaches the Course. She talks about bringing your mind to that place of ultimate truth. In other words, if God didn't create it, it's not real. And if it's not real, it has no power over me. So the course in one of the lessons prompts us, God did not create that car crash. God did not create that cancer. God did not create that accident. And so it is not real. And if it's not real, it has no power over us. So bringing our minds to that highest level, for some of us at certain times, that can pull us out of the battleground. I know for me at times, that's felt like too much of a leap, and I've needed to work from the bottom up in terms of feeling the fear and taking it to the Holy Spirit and sort of feeling like I'm climbing upwards. That's sort of a bottom-up approach, but we can also take the top-down approach where we bring our minds up to truth, up to the highest idea of what God is, and that God cannot... Fear in any form, sickness in any form, does not exist in the mind of God. And so it's not real. It's part of a wild hallucination, and it has no power over me. So bringing our thinking into alignment with that can be enormously healing and powerful. So I'm right there with you, Meg. Thank you.
You know, Corinne, one of the things that has been helping me, because I'm always thinking on a day-to-day practical level of how do I get through this day and choose peace and be at peace. And in the New Beginning, chapter 30, there's this wonderful, it's been really helpful lately. It asks you, what kind of a day do you want? And you know, when you think about what kind of a day do you want and tell yourself there is it kind of goes, there's like a series of little questions here that you ask yourself.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay, throughout the day, at any time you think of it and have a quiet moment for reflection, tell yourself again the kind of day you want, the feelings you would have, the things you want to happen to you, and the things you would experience, and say, if I make no decisions by myself, this is the day that will be given me. So, you know, but I'm reading that, and I'm thinking, oh, gee, that sounds good. But then when I really started asking myself throughout the day, what kind of a day do I want? I'm realizing if I don't judge anything by myself and I just keep turning to Holy Spirit, I mean, it becomes somewhat effortless. But, you know, it's that sense of purpose. What do I want? What kind of a choice do I want to make here? And when I keep throughout the day asking myself, well, what kind of a day do I want? I see very clearly that I have a choice in the matter of what kind of a day I get by choosing with the Holy Spirit. You know, and it really comes down to, it is so simple that the ego goes batty crazy. It really is a matter of just not judging anything by yourself. Mm-hmm. Letting go of the judgment.
100%. Yep.
But it, you know, I see how I get really screwed up by that thought. But then the bottom line is always, well, what do I want here? I want to be at peace. I want to have a good day. I want to feel confident. I want to feel happy. I want to feel appreciative. It's really not that hard.
No, it's not.
You're achieving that higher level of alignment and getting to the place where Meg is. But it's not always an easy journey to get there.
You know, here's a key thing that's coming up for me as you're saying this. I 100% agree about not judging anything, and it's not that we're not going to have judgmental thoughts, it's that we will do not keep them. It's that when we notice we have the judgmental thought, we turn it over to Spirit. So we're letting Spirit do the judging. As you're talking, I was just having this sort of flashback. I had this diagram come to me, and I just jotted this down on a piece of paper. We have this idea, what kind of day do I want? You know, I have a choice. What kind of day do I want? And then I drew two lines with two different circles. Both of them I want to have a nice day, right?
Yeah.
But what I found in my experience, from 1997 to 2009, when I had my, 97 was my first major anxiety episode, 2009 was my second. And I started the course in 97. So what I was doing with the Course in Miracles from 1997 to 2009 was, for the most part, not maybe entirely, but it was, I want to use the course to feel better because I want to keep being separate and I want Corinne to be all happy and nice and, you know, and have a great life. In other words, I was using these ideas to have a great day, but still not really wanting to let go of Corinne. So in other words, I still really wanted to stay separate. Or the other option, now this happened when I had my second, you know, break in 2009. I realized this and I thought, oh, I'm ready to go deeper now. I want to have that nice day. And I'm willing to learn the truth. In other words, I am now willing to start loosening my grip on this idea of Corinne.
Mm-hmm.
So I can be open, you know, and I'm willing to see the insignificance of the body. So in other words, it's like, it's, you know, there's the same goal there for either one. I want to feel good. I want to have a great day. But it's, do I want to have that and stay in the dream? Or do I want to have that while waking up from the dream? So as of that second anxiety experience, because what I realized was that the fear was still there. I wasn't touching.
Yeah.
There was still more work for me to do. There was still unconscious fear and guilt that was staying in place to stay separate. That's the only way to stay separate is if we keep the fear and guilt. So do I want to stay separate and still have this undercurrent of pain, even though maybe, you know, the outward appearance seems nice at times? Or do I want to let go of the fear and guilt to have that great day while awakening to the fact that, my gosh, we are so much bigger and better, you know, and beyond this world, and waking up, you know, to the true self, the self that we all share. So after that second episode is when I shifted into that, what kind of day I want, and I want that, and to know the truth, because I'm only truly going to have that incredible day at a really deep level of peace if I'm dropping that, you know, that belief in separation. So that just, thank you for saying what you said. That just came up for me in my own experience, and
okay.
I'm 100%
wait. I want to add. I wanted to wait just 1 second, Corinne. You sent me, because I was having a not such a good day couple of weeks ago, really not good day at all, and you sent a meditation. You sent like a series of questions to ask yourself to kind of go through. Oh, I wish I could find it. It was so incredibly helpful to me, and it was like literally facing everything that was causing me such anxiety. And it literally just dropped away from me when I actually faced it and went through it with this series of, damn it, I've got it here somewhere on my phone. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Was it the list of questions?
Yes.
It was a whole, like a bulleted list of a ton of different questions?
Yes.
And it was kind of recent? Yeah, that was the second to most recent blog post for anybody who is interested, and maybe everybody got it, but it was the how to deal with intense fear, I think, where I practice radical responsibility, practice radical honesty, all those radical things, and use that radical questioning to really, because what you're doing then is leaving nothing uncovered. You're not leaving any dark cornerstone for the ego to hide out under. You're instead handing it all over.
Mm-hmm. And it's easier to have a good day when you've let go of this crap. But it seems to me that then, you know, all right, so then it all eases up and you're in alignment. But then as you live your life, that ego is, as long as we're in this body, we're going to have to deal with this thing. And it's not something that is, it's old ideas.
It is old ideas.
It's just old ideas that just will seep And the world is constantly teaching these old ideas. I don't care how progressive it becomes. There's still old ideas that don't work. And, you know, so again, so then you go back through the list. And you
and
face it to erase it. And,
yeah.
And it just seems to be this ongoing process of what? I'm not articulate enough to really.
Oh yes, you are. Oh yes.
Isn't it? Well, it just said is that we're on a journey.
We're on a journey. We truly are on a journey.
Have to keep on keeping on. But it's redoing that. So I think we get fearful, and we forget what it said in that. Paragraph 8 in the lifting the veil, the guide who brought you here remains with you.
Yeah.
And we forget that you get stuck. You feel like I know so much that I could never go back, but I'm stuck to going forward.
Yeah.
And so then I remember with what we just read, the guide who brought me here won't let me go.
He's right here with me. And I am blown away, amazed every day at how I'll open this book and he's right there and he gets me back on track. It's a lot of times I have a resistance to opening the book, but believe me, when I open this book, it gets me. He's right there and he gets me right back on track. It's miraculous.
Well, it's the remembering that we are resistant, and then it brings us back to him.
That's right. And we want to get back into that body. I want to be Paula. I don't want to let her go.
Right.
Just the ongoing craziness. But it just seems to get better and better and better and better as we work with this material.
Well, and one question I had, though, Paula, is like when we're talking about how do I have a good day, well, sometimes a good day can be that it's awful and you look at it and you realize what you've learned, or you look on how you made mistakes, but you recognize them. And so that isn't such a bad day, even if it wasn't a good day.
So true. So true. I love it. Thank you.
That's so true.
Brynn.
Beautiful.
I was going to say.
Sue, I was going to come back to you. Yes.
Yes.
Sue and then Deidre.
You mentioned a couple of books. And both of them were, I guess Dr. Alexander's wasn't, his was a near-death experience. But there's a book that I have read that is quite incredible. It's a man that did not die, but had the experience that we are all seeking. And it's called Secret Splendor, The Journey Within. And you can get it on Amazon for like $1.99. It's very, but here are the chapters: the preparation, the prelude, the abyss, because he was seeking for reality, and he discovered that the intellect is useless. He almost went crazy because every argument he had, he could come up with an opposing argument. The next chapter is a new faculty. The next chapter is the radiance. The reality is the next. Speaking a new language.
You get my text.
Understanding consciousness. Approaching soul realization. Perceiving the fourth dimension. Experiencing the sixth sense. Living under grace. Transcending knowledge. He did this all just asking for reality. The one great need, detachment of the self from the intellect, the mystical attitude, a peace that passes all understanding, the initiation, surrender to the soul, and love, the unifying cosmic force. This book is incredible. And what I remember reading years ago that the rabbis that studied the Talmud said that when we fell from grace, there is initially 10 dimensions, and we collapsed ourselves down to 3, which is height, depth, width. You know, everything that we see in our world has a shape. It's either height, you know what I mean? It's the,
But the fourth dimension is time, timelessness. That's why in the Course it's always talking about the present moment, the now, timelessness, all of those references, that because that is the fourth dimension. And when he saw the fourth dimension, he saw behind his first experience was that he was walking past a flower shop, and all of a sudden this flower looked radiant to him. And it was actually like the flower was smiling at him. And he could see this life force behind the form of the flower, and he knew that that life force had always been there. It was timeless. And he could see things. And the book is incredible. I mean, he woke up and canaries were singing, and they were singing love. He had the realization that eating itself is a very, very sacred act. The things that we do in this life are infused with the sacred.
And what's the title of the book?
It's called Secret Splendor, The Journey Within. And the author is Charles Ernest Essert. It is fabulous. He leaves the body and he goes and has this mystical communion with God. And he said there's this love that came from him. And he said this being that was there, he said there was this being that I almost approached, but I didn't. It was apart from me a little bit. But this almost, he said, just almost a sexual love. And then it would be a profound, just this incredible different kinds of love that would come from him. And then it would come from this being that was so incredible. He said, but the one thing that was the most profound about this being is laughter, full of laughter. Love, joy,
thank you,
everything.
Sue. Thank you, thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, go on.
It's incredible. It's an incredible book. In fact, I'm going to read it again. I got it out of my book shelf, and I'm going to read it again.
I'm so grateful that you brought it up, because I actually ordered it after you recommended it last time, but I never,
really?
I started, yeah, I have it, and I just, I picked it up, I read a little bit, and then I don't know why I put it down, but I forgot about it, and so thank you for for
but
bringing it up again.
He talks an awful lot about the mind and about, it's kind of dry, but when you get into the, like the fifth chapter, it starts talking about his experience. It's really incredible.
Awesome, awesome. Thank you so much for the recommendation. I know, Deidre, you had something to say too? Deidre, are you there? Did we lose Deidre?
Yeah, I muted myself because I've got some background noise coming. I just was going to, you were talking, Corinne, about how keeping nothing hidden when you were talking before, and I really resonate with that, because I think sometimes when you're on any kind of spiritual path, and whatever your upbringing is, like spirituality kind of teaches, you know, be nice, you know, be, you know, there's kind of can be rules about how to behave, and be nice, you know, don't rock the boat, and I think sometimes that can teach us unknowingly to sort of spiritual bypass things, and by that I mean try to go around our anxiety without really looking at it and without really feeling it, and I've really been learning a lot through the program that I've been doing with Clear Mind, which is a counseling program that's based on the principles of the Course, that if we can learn to sit with our discomfort, then our discomfort becomes our greatest teacher, and we no longer are afraid of it. And that, to me, is one of the biggest things that we can do, is that we can choose the concept of the ego will teach us to try to avoid what it is that we fear. Because if we avoid it, our identity with the personality becomes real. The more we avoid, the more we invest in the personality self, the Deidre, the Corinne, the Paula. But with sitting with whatever is uncomfortable and saying, what is this showing me? And also, we're learning how to love when we're studying the Course. So we know that we cannot do this alone. We need our brothers to help us learn, because we're all factions of the same light, right? But we need the connection with our brother to shed light upon what's the illusion of what's keeping us in these separate identities. And why this is such a revelation is that sometimes the anxiety that we experience feels pretty damn uncomfortable. We don't want to go there, and we don't want our brothers or the idea of separate brothers, we're all one, but there's this idea that, you know, we don't want people to see the parts of us that we don't want to show. But I've learned, particularly this year, sitting in the vulnerability and being willing to show people what I affectionately call the mess, the parts that we don't want to share with others, you actually learn that it's okay, and that in showing, being willing to really open up and keeping nothing hidden, like Corinne was talking about before, that's where true connection lies. And that's where we're not holding and hiding behind our defenses, our personality selves anymore. And we're saying, look, this is the truth in all of its messiness, but this is the truth. and this, that's the moment where you say, here I am, God. And that's where what the Course, I believe, it calls the holy instant, is that, you know, there's nothing to be ashamed of. There's nothing to fear. There's a passage in the Course where it talks about us as little children, and it makes reference to monsters, you know, and once you reveal those monsters, they're not scary anymore. That, to me, is what this vulnerability is. And so once you're on the other side of that, and anxiety is such a wonderful barometer of where you are in that vulnerability. So I don't know how clear that came across, but
oh my God,
it's
so clear as a bell.
So I'll just stop there, because I could talk all day about it. But
that was very helpful.
Yeah,
very helpful, very helpful. And there is the perfect example of how the spirit, how under spirit things are repurposed. So rather than that pain being, you know, used by the ego to, oh, let me avoid this, this is awful, this is whatever, that repurposing is now, like you're describing, being with it, not running from it. Now we learn from it. Now we allow it to be used on behalf of our awakening instead of staying asleep. I loved what you said, Deidre. Thank you.
I don't know who it was on the call earlier, but it was they were saying, I think her name might be Linda, but I'm not sure. She was saying that even your worst day can turn out to be your best day.
Yeah.
And that is so true, because when you're willing to go where the rubber meets the road, where and I'm not saying that our lessons have to be tough, but what I am saying is sometimes those are the best learning opportunities, because that's where we learn that there really isn't anything to be afraid of.
you know. Also, when we really do face these ego thoughts that, you know, cause us to feel so vulnerable, we no longer feel vulnerable.
Right.
We no longer feel that lack of confidence. It just gets you right back into alignment with Source and with that wonderful clear thinking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Hi, Karen. A question really quick.
Homira, yes. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. So a couple of things. I want to ask about discernment, because I'm always fighting this idea of how much to share or how much of myself to share with others. Not in a group like ours. I'm pretty open. But just generally speaking, and to what Deidre was just saying about, you know, anxiety and how it's just, and how the ego wants to kind of hold us in this personality that we've developed so we don't face our whatever vulnerabilities there are, and we hide from people and we don't want to show others what's really going on inside. And I've heard mindfulness teachers like Tara Brach talk about the importance of doing that, but doing it with discernment. And I'm wondering if that still applies here. As far as the course's viewpoint on that, that's one question. And then the second question is, and I think I've asked this before, so forgive me if I'm asking it again, but I've found that there are times where I feel truly in my heart through meditation and at talking to God that I've forgiven something or someone, right? And then I find that somehow, when I revisit it, but it could be years later, it could be months later, and then there's still something there that it's not gone. So I'm wondering if you could speak to both of those two things. And by the way, I did join that other Facebook group under a pseudonym, because I've never been on Facebook. So so you know, Corinne, I just joined that too. And so, yeah, I want to hear from you and see what you, or anybody that has anything to say about this, but maybe you, Corinne.
Awesome. Great. Well, I'm glad that you joined under a pseudonym. I'm so glad. I was actually going to suggest that earlier for anybody not on Facebook and wanting to take part in that study group, is just make up a fake name and just that'll be your only thing that you do on Facebook. So I'm glad.
Well, because, you know, my organization that I work for, they so frown upon it. So I've always been terrified of doing anything on Facebook. But then I thought, you know what,
right.
I'll just do a pseudonym. So.
great. Oh, so I will give you an example for your first question about discernment. When I was in the thick of the panic attacks and anxiety that I was having, and even when I was in the thin of it, when I was still having some issues, but it wasn't maybe as debilitating, there were certain people that I was completely open and honest with, and most of those people happened to be Course students. There were other folks in my immediate family that I chose not to tell, or if I told them, it would be after the fact. That mm-hmm. was because what I needed at the time was for the person that I told to be able to still see me, to be able to still see the truth in me, or at least be willing to see the truth in me. I have some family members who are big on sympathy, so had I shared it with them and been honest about where I was, the gushing sympathy and feeling sorry for me would have been not helpful to me. I didn't want that. That wasn't going to serve me. And so I used discernment to choose who I was and who I wasn't going to share with. And that discernment came from a feeling, or another, you know, you could say, from asking for guidance from spirit. So I very much do feel that discernment still applies, where you can discern if it feels right to be vulnerable and open, or if perhaps it doesn't. And I'm curious, Deidre, if you have anything you want to add to that too. The second question about, you feel like you've really forgiven something and then, you know, it shows up again later and it's like, what? I thought this was gone. I completely relate wholeheartedly. That's happened to me too. The Course says, trials are but lessons you fail to learn, presented once more. So where you once made a faulty choice, you can now make a better. It's not that you didn't forgive. It's not that, you know, it's not that you did anything wrong earlier. It's that, number one, you can look at it as another layer. It perhaps is another layer that's coming up to the surface now that you're ready to have an opportunity to choose again, and that's why it's coming up. The important piece is that we don't judge it, because if we say, oh, I must have not forgiven, like I didn't do a good job, all that is, again, is ego feeding ego. That's, again, just ego getting back in there to pour some more fuel on its fire. And so we have uprooted the ego. Your act of choosing what felt like complete and true forgiveness was complete and true forgiveness. The ego, again, is uprooted. It's looking for a home. And so it's going to occasionally drop in, and there'll be another moment of quote-unquote temptation. Are we going to take the same bait as we did a million times before? Or when it shows up again, are we now going to have that strong enough spiritual muscle to say, ah, look what's showing up again. I thought I was over this, but okay, here it is. And I see it clearly, and here's how I'm feeling about it, and I'm willing to take it to the Holy Spirit. So it's always, always, always just an opportunity to take it to spirit, to practice true forgiveness, and to, it's so important to not judge what's coming up and if it seems to be showing up again.
Corinne, this is where I ask myself, this is where, because I'm so aware of this, you know, just when I thought I forgive something, it'll pop back up again. And that's where this, well, what kind of a day do I want comes in? Because I know damn well if I go back and make those choices to listen to the voice of the ego, I'm going to get wrapped up, go down that spiral staircase, and back where I started from. So that's why I thought, that's what, you know, where I'm at right now in my life, that's where that little paragraph is so helpful to me, because I'm not going to be happy. I'm not going to have a good day. My life isn't going to go well if I keep going in that direction.
Yeah, beautiful. Deidre, did you have anything you wanted to add about the vulnerability and discernment piece?
Yeah, discernment is really important, or I found it to be very important, and it sort of goes along the lines of the line in the Course that talks about, I need you nothing. And it doesn't say you sit around and do nothing. It means I do no thing without spirit, right? So that's kind of how I look upon discernment, is discernment, number one, is not the same as judgment. So I think when we're on a spiritual path, at least for me, when I first started practicing the idea of discernment, that was confusing to me, because I thought using discernment was making a judgment on the situation or the people or whatever, but it's actually not. But the important piece is that you're, like Corinne said, taking whatever it is, the decision, to spirit, and you're not making that decision alone. So for me, in my practice, I do this with almost everything, from the moment I get up to the moment I go to sleep at night. And there are a few moments in the day sometimes where I will get distracted and forget, but I will literally, like, I might get an idea I'll just give a small example. There was a course group that just recently started up, and I believe you guys were even talking about it earlier, and I had this idea that I would invite a friend to it. And then I stopped myself, and I was like, wait a minute, I didn't talk to higher self, inner guide teacher about this. And when I tuned in to ask whether I should invite this friend to this group, the answer that I received was no. So I have to trust that. And so that's, I don't know why I was given no, but I know without a shadow of a doubt I was given no. So all I can say about discernment is a knowing will come across your experience, that you just know that this is the right decision in whatever circumstance you find yourself in. It's just a knowing that is really easy and effortless, and it's really strong. I don't know if you want to add anything, Corinne, to that, but it's just...
That was beautiful. I'll just add two more thoughts. And the first one is what you just said, Deidre, about asking, I'll just reemphasize that what the Course says. Jesus says in the Course, ask me which miracles to perform and which ones not to perform. So the bottom line answer being we always, always ask. And then just the second thing that I wanted to say, this was going back to your second question, Homira, about, you know, we've forgiven it and then it seems to show up again. We have to also look at our expectations of how we think the external picture should look. So if we think it should look a certain way, boom, there is our opportunity to look at our expectations that the form should look a certain way. We have an opportunity to look at that with spirit. So was that all helpful?
Oh, my gosh, yes, very much. In fact, I was thinking I really had the wrong idea about discernment because, I mean, even when you talked about speaking to only, let's say, certain people that you felt like they would hold the truth in mind about you versus some family members that would just sympathize. It wasn't so much that, like, I just felt unsafe in certain groups. It was me who was deciding that. I didn't ask Holy Spirit, you know, should I share in this situation or should I not? I made a judgment based on how my body was feeling. And what happens is, like, I'll just go into, like, you know, fight, flight, freeze, kind of freeze, you know, in those moments. And then I feel unsafe. And as a result of feeling unsafe, then I don't share. And the times that I've not listened to that, I've just kind of like shared. It's either I've shared too much or I've gotten feedback or it seems maybe my perception was that people attack instead of like, you know, understood. So these are all only Homera concepts. So I didn't share it with Spirit to help me to see it the right way. So that was really, really helpful with what you said and what Deidre said right now. And also I wanted to say, Corinne, to your point, you know, after I read the book, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers, I mean, it's such a beautiful book in terms of what is there after here. And yet, when he talks about going and becoming the universe, I found intense fear with that thought. I just found myself like, oh, my God, you know, that means nothingness instead of, you know what I mean? Like, so I'm so still identified with this persona. So, yeah, I this idea of, you know, the fear of God, I got to look at that some more.
Yeah, exactly. And that's all it is. That's all. When we notice that fear come up with that idea, that's just an opportunity to look at it with spirit, because it will not come if we fear it. And it's the type of thing that if that's true, then we're not going to fear it when we're ready. Like that's each little fear that we allow to drop away brings us to the next expansion of awareness. It brings us to the next, like, oh, this is who I am. Wow, why did I fear this? And then we notice then, like, okay, this is coming up. I'm willing to look at this. Then our awareness, we expand again. We start to remember and remember and remember, yeah, until there is we realize that, oh my gosh, there is nothing to fear. There is nothing to fear. So exactly, you nailed it. If you notice that fear coming up, it just becomes an opportunity to look at it with Holy Spirit. And I love, Homira, how you said you call them Homira concepts, Corinne concepts, Paul
that
concepts.
Awesome.
Like those are our. That's our, those are our problems. And even the concept of Corinne, that's just the problem. That's exactly it. And so we can just look at it with Holy Spirit. And going back to what we said earlier about being on a journey, it's a journey of remembering what has never changed. We've never gone anywhere. And the journey is actually done.
Yeah.
I'll say one more thing. I was listening to How Will the World End? In the Manual for Teachers, I have the course on CD, so I was listening in my car. How will the world end? That used to be a thought that used to terrify me. And the thought came up to me, the world is already over.
Yes.
And I felt such joy. The world is already over. There's not going to be a big destruction, anything like that. It's already over, and we're going to just wake up to the fact that it's already over.
What's even more hurtful, Corinne, the world never happened.
I just wanted to say one thing. Deidre, I loved everything you said, and when you were speaking, what came to me was, there's effortlessness within effort. So that abidance,
like that.
So in that abidance, just sitting with what is, it's a sort of effortlessness within effort.
That's like learning we don't need vigilance, and yet we are vigilant temporarily until we realize we don't need vigilance at all.
And Camara, I had one quick thought to share. with regard to your second question about another forgiveness opportunity coming back, I've been working with this too, and what I've found really helpful is the type of forgiveness that the Course talks about, meaning that whatever the situation is, true forgiveness would say that never happened, right? So while we're experiencing whatever it is that we're experiencing, we can't necessarily jump from A to Z in one swoop. Like, and I'm talking, when I say this, I'm talking in terms of what the Course would call level, because it's already done already, like everything's already forgiven. But while we're having these experiences and working within forgiveness, it's perfectly okay to have compassion with ourselves when something comes up a second time or a third time. And it's just like, instead of going, oh my God, here I go again, because I've done this. I've done it recently, and it hurts when I'm that hard on myself. Like, oh my God, I'm getting frustrated. I'm supposed to be spiritual. Screw this, you know. And that is just not helpful, right? That is not helpful. It doesn't take me anywhere but deeper down the road of fear that I don't want to go. So if we can just look at it as maybe it doesn't feel like in the moment, like all is forgiven, that nothing happened, but wherever you are in the forgiveness process, wherever it feels like you are, again, because I'm talking about levels here, so I don't want to be confusing, you've still peeled away another layer that you don't have to put back on the onion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you're still doing the work. So that's all.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Well said, Deidre. Awesome. Thank you.
Very well said. Thank you, everybody, from the bottom of my heart for showing up for these beautiful, amazing shares and questions and for the joining. I just, knowing that we are waking up together, I mean, what better feeling is that, is there than that, you know, that we're all in this together. We're doing it. I love you all. Have a great week.
You too.
Love you.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Love you.
God bless you.
Love you all. God bless you.
Good night.
Bye, everybody.
Love you, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Love you.
Good night. Love you.